the clear implication, it seemed, of the Times report on Mr. Trump's 1995 tax return was that he had improperly gotten out of paying taxes. What about that?
No, it's from what I can see, it's not illegal. You know, in this area, particularly real estate, debt is managed as much as profits. That is, you can make as much money, believe it or not, with debt as you can often in moving profits.
And, how so?
Well, there's a thing called a net operating loss, where you can actually claim losses to investments, even losses experienced by the bank, not you personally, and use that to protect you against taxation. Companies do this all the time. Major companies often don't pay much taxes. It's a long-standing criticism.
Income taxes.
Right. And it's a long-standing criticism.
The Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's edition of Lifetime Income.
And I'm John Loeffler, and guess what? You know that we are headed toward the end of the year already. It seems to have come rather rapidly. One of the things that we discuss frequently on the program as we get to the end of the year, not to mention for lifetime income and planning, is taxes. Taxes are coming. Hooray, hooray. Next to medical expenses, taxes are probably the biggest expense you will face as a working individual or even in retirement. And everybody wants to pay lower taxes. I remember, Jim, I started a controversy one time in the locker room. I usually launch a statement to see who bites, you know.
Launch a missile into the locker room.
Launch a verbal missile into the locker room. And I said, no nation has ever taxed its way into prosperity. They've taxed themselves out of existence, but never into prosperity. And some attorney there just went absolutely ballistic, but of course didn't have many things to say that would value his point there, because I've always asked, why is it when people take money from me, that's supposed to be good? You know, in my mind, I know what to do with my money. Taxes are on the agenda. It's in the debates that we hear coming from the presidential candidates. Trump wants three brackets, 12, 25, and 33%. Mrs. Clinton wants to raise them to over 50%. And lately, over the last week or so, the press has been implying that Donald Trump pays no taxes. He has a lot of carryover losses that it is legitimate to deduct. But lo and behold, although the New York Times would have you think that this is the case, Mr. Trump is not doing anything unusual. Big money sometimes makes big profits and pays big taxes, but sometimes there are big losses, and that's legitimate to carry those losses forward. The Clinton Foundation has done that. Other foundations and other big money people, such as Warren Buffett and George Soros, use this. So nothing is new. The only thing you are required to pay under the law is the tax which is due. And when you carry forward losses, maybe that tax is nothing for this year, but it doesn't mean you haven't paid taxes before, nor will you not pay taxes in the future. Also interesting, by the way, the New York Times, which has been thrumming this drum, took a net operating loss as well this last year, Jim. So,
well, so did the Clintons. Clintons had a net operating loss for 2015 as well.
I didn't realize that, the NOL. Okay, so we're going to look at here what I'm calling the clump tax holes, that the Clinton-Trump tax holes, the clumps.
I like that, the clumps.
Yeah, there you are, Clinton and Trump. How these tax holes work, they're not very mysterious, and a lot of people make use of them. So let's describe what this is all about.
Well, let's go back to the controversy over the weekend. It was reported that in 1995, Donald Trump reported a net operating loss of $915 million. Now, you got to remember, let's put this in context. Number one, most of Trump's assets are in real estate. And as we were coming out of in 1991, we went through an S&L crisis where real estate really got hit hard and remained very weak, very depressed for a long period of time. So it would not be unusual, given the size of his net worth, that what was happening during that time frame, that he would have large losses. I mean, I was able to buy my first office building during that period of time in 1995 as a result of depressed prices. So Anyway, he lost $915 million. Now, the media is abuzz with this, John, as if this was some new or some kind of mysterious tax loophole that Trump was exploiting, which is false. And that is going to be the subject of what we're going to discuss today. We're going to discuss net operating losses, how they're used in our system to reduce taxes. When you lose money, the government says, okay, if you lost money, you can use that loss and apply it against previous year's profits where you paid taxes, or forward against future income. And John, it is very commonplace. Anybody that has taken a basic accounting course at college would be familiar with what a net operating loss is. According to the Tax Foundation, in 2014, 1.2 million businesses and Americans had net operating losses averaging about $163,000 a year. And that has grown because as the economy gets bigger, as more businesses are formed, remember during the early days of a business, you know, you may be losing money. But to give an example, in 1995, businesses and individuals reported $49.3 billion of net operating losses. In 2014, the latest year that we have figures, that has grown to $196.2 billion. And then what the New York Times did not report is this is very common. For example, in 2015, Hillary Clinton reported an operating loss of $700,000, which she used to offset income. And if we want to really get into the weeds here, in 2015, the New York Times made $30 million in profit, but got $3.6 million in tax refunds as a result of applying net operating losses, because the New York Times has lost a lot of money. It's not a great newspaper anymore. And they've been losing subscription ad revenues, so they had losses. And they carried those losses forward and used those losses to offset their profits of $30 million to the tune of the losses were so great, the New York Times actually got a refund by applying back for previous years where they pay taxes. So, John, the important point is this is done. It's very commonplace, contrary to the way it was covered in the media by political reporters, like, we've just discovered a smoking gun here. There is something devious about what's happened.
Yeah, but remember, Jim, that in the game of politics, the game is to win, and you win by shifting what the public thinks. Even if a week later what you're saying is proven as total hooey, doesn't make any difference. They just rely on people remembering that, but that's why we do what we do here. Let's explain what a net operating loss is. Sometimes it's represented by the letters NOL, how it occurs and how it's handled on the books and then on your tax reporting.
I'm not going to get into all the things that go into making a net operating loss, but let's just simplify it for listeners. It means that you had more expenses than you had revenues. So let's say if you're a business, you took $1 million in terms of revenue, but you had $1.5 million of expenses, you would have a net operating loss of $500,000. So the easiest way and simplest way to understand what a net operating loss is, it means that you have more expenses than you do have revenues. Now, Congress set up net operating losses in the tax code. It's been in there for decades because they would rather lose a taxpayer than lose a business, because Congress knows we get into recessions. I mean, you take a look at the big car companies, whether it's General Motors, Ford, or Chrysler. They make a lot of money during the years the economy is booming, but when the economy goes into recession, they have to liquidate inventory. They lose money. They lose a lot of money. And so what happens is Congress said, well, you know, if you lose a lot of money, even though in the previous years you were paying a lot of taxes, we're going to let you use those losses to offset future income, or in some cases, you could go back, like the New York Times, and get a tax refund on previous year's taxes. So net operating losses are designed to allow business to come back So the tax code and bankruptcy laws are really designed to keep this system going. Because, John, you know, there's something called a business cycle. And people in Congress understand that. So do economists, that if the economy is booming because we're in an economic recovery, well, people make lots of money, and then when they do, they pay taxes. But they also know that when we have a recession, think of what that recession was like in 2007 and 2009, where businesses, good and bad, were losing a lot of money to the tune of, well, the government had to go out and bail out the automobile companies like Chrysler, GM, and some of the others because their losses were so horrific. Now, those losses that GM incurred, they could use those losses to either go back in previous years to get a tax refund, or they could go forward and use those losses to offset future profits. So, I mean, the New York Times was making this sound like, wow, we really discovered something here. Folks, this has been going on for half a century. We've been doing this. It was put in the tax code for that reason, because here's the way the capitalistic system works. When a business is started, especially during the early years, you know, you think of Apple or even Facebook, they generally lose money, and they can lose a lot of money. And so what are you doing if, let's say, you're starting a business, you lose $50 million 1 year, the second year you use, or, you know, you take a look at a company like Amazon, they were losing money every single year during the dot-com boom, and it wasn't until mid-decade in the last decade that Amazon actually turned a profit. But look where they are today, one of the most valuable companies and probably one of the best performing stocks on the stock exchange this year has been Amazon. In fact, if you take a look at Apple, one of the largest cap companies, when Steve Jobs came back to Apple in 1998, Apple was 6 months away from going bankrupt. They were incurring large losses, so that in future years, as Jobs turned the company around and it became one of the most profitable companies on the planet, you know, they were able to use those losses that they incurred during the tough years when Apple was not doing well. They used those losses to offset income. So, John, this is something that was put in the tax code because we are a capitalistic society. And the government wants businesses to survive, and the government understands that certain businesses lose money when the economy goes bad or in a recession or at various stages in their life for whatever reason, a bad product launch, lawsuits, or various expenses will incur. A company will have large operating losses, and the tax code basically says you've got a couple choices here. For example, let's take the New York Times. If you have a net operating loss and you can go back to previous years and file an amended tax return and get back the money that you paid in taxes. So the way net operating losses work in our present tax code is you can go back 2 years, or you can carry those losses forward for 20 years, because they know sometimes in an economic downturn, I mean, you take a look at the money that General Motors lost, Ford and Chrysler did during the Great Recession. Those losses were so horrific that the tax code allows companies to carry those losses forward, because it may, you know, you take a recession. And we were in that recession from the fall of 2007 till the summer of 2009. So for 2 years, these automobile companies were losing billions and billions of dollars. So now the automobile companies are flush with cash. They've been making a lot of profit. But in that economic recovery, as they began to make profit, they paid zero taxes because they could use those losses to offset it.
All right. Now, the New York Times was claiming that Donald Trump paid no taxes for something like 18 years. Is that possible?
Of course it is. I mean, if he lost $915 million, but Trump is, at least this is what's been stated publicly, he's made close to $1 billion last 2 years. I doubt it because, you know, the economy and the real estate markets recovered. They boomed in the 90s. They boomed in the last decade, and the real estate market is booming now. So theoretically, what they were basically saying, and it's actually 20 years, you can carry those net operating losses forward for 20 years. So they really misstated, and it's a fraudulent claim that the New York Times has made. I'm surprised they don't get sued over this. But the implication is the time frame in which you can deduct a loss going forward is 18 years. It's actually 20 years. You can go back 2 years or go forward 20 years on a net operating loss.
What about individuals? I mean, I keep thinking about capital gains like losses on stocks, which a lot of people took during the crash thing. But what about individuals on net operating losses? How do they look for an individual?
Let me explain a little bit of difference. There are two different rules, one on net operating losses and one on capital gain losses. If you have a capital gain loss, you can offset those losses up to $3,000 against your income or unlimited against future profits. And if you had, I don't know, let's say you had a $10,000 capital gain loss this year, you could offset, if you didn't have any capital gains, you could offset $3,000 against your income, which would leave you $7,000 of your loss left. And you can carry that loss forward until you used it up with, let's say, future capital gains. So that's on the capital investment side. On the net operating loss, yes, individuals can incur net operating losses. In the most common, John, are probably large casualty and theft losses. Think of, you know, what we're seeing this weekend with this Hurricane Matthew, where there's going to be damage as a result of hurricane, the strong winds, the rain. So, you know, typically you see these individuals have net operating losses. They're usually a result of casualty and theft, you know, as a result of hurricanes, tornadoes, fires, or earthquakes. Those are typical of what you see in most net operating losses for individuals. But, you know, it's just something that happens and it's done all the time. And most of the time it is done with businesses, LLCs, corporations. And John, it's done to the tune of millions of people every year will have something like that, that they have some kind of loss or a business has some kind of loss. So contrary to, you know, what was discussed on the media this weekend, like, wow, this is so strange. We've never heard of this. This is so bizarre. It's just absolutely false. It's nonsense. And a good example, let's say a company took in $1 million in revenue, but let's say they had expenses of $1.5 million, they would have a net operating loss of $500,000. So the next year, let's say the company earned $250,000, they could use $250,000 of that $500,000 net operating loss to wipe out that taxable income, and they would pay zero taxes. And then the following year, let's say if the company earned $300,000, they would have $250,000 left on that net operating loss. They could use that, and they would only have only $50,000 of profit. So, John, this is something that occurs constantly. Anybody that has ever taken a basic 101 accounting course would know this.
What are some of the other tax breaks for the clumps? Because they all seem to be good at sheltering things. And again, this is all legitimate, you know?
Yeah, and it's put in there by our tax code. Another tax break occurs in real estate. If you own investment real estate, whether it's a single family home, apartment complex, a commercial building, warehouse, mobile home park, whatever it is, you can deduct your expenses, the interest that you pay on the mortgage, because a lot of real estate is owned with debt, property taxes that you pay on your rental property, and there is something called depreciation. Anybody that owns a home, if you're listening to this program, you know as a homeowner, you're always doing something to repair in your house. Something breaks down and needs to be replaced and needs to be maintained. And so there is something under the laws called depreciation. And if you own residential real estate, you can depreciate that real estate over 27 and a half years. So let's just take a simple example. You own a rental property whose value is $275,000. Now, if you depreciate that under current tax law, you could do that over 27 and a half years, you would get a tax deduction of $10,000 a year. Obviously, there's other deductions you get on real estate, but I'm just trying to simplify this for illustration purposes. So let's say on that rental, you got $20,000 of rental income, and you have $10,000 of depreciation. So you could use that $10,000 of depreciation, even though it wasn't an out-of-pocket expense. So therefore, on that $20,000 of rent, 50% of your rental income would be sheltered from federal and state taxes as a result of depreciation. And so it's not surprising that Trump's taxes would be lower than the average individual, because the vast majority of Trump's assets are in real estate, especially commercial real estate, from high-rise buildings to casinos to golf courses. And this applies to anybody that owns real estate.
I've been thinking about this. Do Democrats own real estate too? I don't know.
I mean, anybody, you know, independents own real estate too. So if you're a real estate investor and Trump's net worth is basically built on real estate, I'm sure he has stocks, bonds, and other type assets, but the bulk of his net worth is in real estate. And if you're in real estate and you're getting most of your revenues from rents, you're going to be offsetting those rents with depreciation. Even the Clintons own investment real estate. So this is not, you know, a Donald Trump thing. It's just the way the law is situated, because, you know, if you own rental real estate, you're going to have repairs, you're going to have plumbing, electrical problems, roofing problems. You know, you're always going to have to do something if you want to maintain your properties and keep them in good shape. So this is nothing new, John, and it's something that I would not be surprised if Trump eventually releases his tax return, he would pay a small portion in taxes as a result of his real estate tax deductions. And once again, what I find ironic is everything was like, this was all about Donald Trump. He had net operating losses. This is so unusual. The New York Times had net operating losses last year and they got a tax refund. Hillary Clinton had a $700,000 net operating loss, but you never hear that from the media. So, you know, they should make political reporters take at least an economic course or at least accounting 101, because this is so commonplace. I just couldn't believe we spent the whole weekend talking about this as this was some new smoking gun discovery. But once again, this is a political election year.
All right. Well, both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump had some form of net operating loss. They both invest in real estate. Now, here's another one. What about foundations?
It's interesting because both Clintons and the Trumps have foundations, and the wealth in those foundations are considerable. Now, the Clinton net worth personally, according to recent report, Bill is worth $80 million, Hillary is worth $31 million, so the Clintons collectively are worth $111 million, where the bulk of the Clinton net worth, however, is in their foundation, because their foundation is worth close to $400 million. And there's a number of reasons why individuals set up foundations, especially when your net worth starts going north of $50 million. You know, I have quite a few clients that set up a foundation and we manage foundation money. It is a very common thing because, and we're going to talk about the advantages of doing this, but when you donate money to a foundation, including your own, you get a tax deduction for doing it. If you place assets in a foundation, you get a tax deduction for doing it. And there are two advantages to a foundation. And the biggest one that you see wealthy families do this is because of estate taxes. Now, the current estate tax rate is 40%. So when you die, if you're a husband and wife and your assets are over $10.9 million, if you have trust, the government takes 40% of that. So how do you get these big families that are worth billions of dollars, like the Waltons, like Buffett, like Bill Gates? What do you know about Buffett and Gates? They both have foundations. So it's one way of preserving your assets from taxation. And Hillary Clinton is wanting to raise the estate tax rates to 65%. And it's one reason why the Clintons have a foundation, and lower the exemption from $5.5 million down to roughly $3 million, and increase the tax rate to 50%. And then once you go over, I think it's what, $10.9 million or whatever the figure is, it would jump to 65%. So it's one of the main reasons the bulk of the Clinton net worth is in their foundation.
You know, I have a question though, Jim. All right, I can see the tax advantage to a foundation, but how do you get your money in and out of it? I mean, they're not just putting it somewhere to keep it somewhere, right? There must be other advantages, is what I'm asking.
Well, I mean, there's all kinds of advantages. Actually, there's 10 of them. Number one, you get an immediate tax deduction. So you get the tax deduction when the foundation is funded, then you make your charitable gifts over time. You also, for many wealthy individuals, it's leaving a lasting legacy. Foundations are set up in perpetuity and they can burnish your name far beyond, you know, we've heard about the Rockefeller Foundation. Anybody watching PBS, taking a look at a program that's sponsored, they list the various foundations that are sponsors for the program. And also, when you have a foundation, you tend to be taken more serious as a philanthropist. A foundation kind of imparts gravitas that causes people to take your philanthropy more serious. It's like, wow, you do have a lot of money and you are serious about philanthropy. It's also a way to sidestep unsolicited requests because people that are very wealthy are always solicited for money. And you can just say, well, you know, I have a foundation and we take care of those things in foundation. This is what you see very commonplace. Our highest net worth clients all have foundations. It also allows you to deepen your focus on philanthropy. You take a look at the change in Bill Gates. The Gates Foundation is the largest foundation in the world. And when Buffett passes on his assets as one of the third richest men in the world to the Gates Foundation, it is going to be colossal in terms of size. It allows to build a better family. Family members take part on philanthropic research. They also can be on the board of the foundation, just like Chelsea Clinton receives a nice, comfortable salary on being on the Clinton Foundation. So children, relatives can be on. I mean, you take a look at the Ford Foundation. There's still a Ford on the board. You take a look at the Gates Foundation. I'm sure there'll be a Gates on it. Also, tax deductible grants to individuals in need. Private foundation allows you to provide emergency assistance directly to individuals using dollars which you've already received. And that is done quite frequently. You can also run charitable programs without setting up a nonprofit organization. You pay charitable expenses, and a lot of people run their personal expenses in their foundations, and they provide loans. So there are a number of reasons to do it, but especially when you start getting into a larger estate, you do it because you're going to preserve the assets from government confiscation of death taxes. And the way things are going, you know, depending if Hillary Clinton gets elected, she wants to raise the estate tax to 65% from the current rate of 40% and lower the exemption. So, you know, imagine that if you're a wealthy individual, you're going to want to shelter and preserve your assets. And by the way, you can sit on your own board, be part of it, and you control the assets of your foundation. So it's another way you can control your wealth with all kinds of tax deductions.
I want to remind everybody, too, on Lifetime Income tomorrow, Alan Cole is going to be with us from the Independent Tax Foundation, and we'll look at more of the facts behind the uproar over Donald Trump's tax return. Now, it's amazing because if you realize, let's look at the Clintons on that side of the equation. Clintons are worth $110 million joint between the two of them, but their foundation is worth over $400 million. That's substantial.
Yeah, and the latest report we've got is from 2014. The Clintons took in $218 million in contributions. They took in $114 million in grants. And it looks like investment income was roughly about $6.2 million. So the total revenues to the Clinton Foundation was roughly $338 million. And the Clintons spent that year, the Clinton Foundation spent roughly $250 million. Now, what's amazing is almost 20% of the foundation went to management in general. That's expenses. I mean, the private jets, the hotels, the homes, the places, all of that is tax deductible inside that foundation. So as a result of that, the foundation actually, its net worth increased because they took in $338 million and they only spent $250 million. So basically, the foundation's net worth went up about $90 million. So the net worth of the foundation, the net assets after liabilities, is roughly about $372 million. So the bulk of the Clinton estate is free of income taxes and free of estate taxes. And the Clintons are doing nothing any different that what Donald Trump is doing, what Bill Gates is doing, what Warren Buffett is doing, what the Fords did, the Rockefellers, and those that came before them. So this is nothing new in terms of what is going on here with either net operating losses or in the case of foundations. I mean, the wealthy have used this. And by the way, the tax laws are structured for this. The tax laws want people setting up foundations. So it's just absolutely amazing. When I saw the furor and the uproar in the media, I thought two things. Either one, these people are stupid, because anybody that's taken accounting 101 course, one of the first things you're going to learn is what a net operating loss is. And second is, and this, you see this so often when it comes to reporting on economic issues, debt issues, or any business issues, most political reporters are completely ignorant and uninformed about taxes or economic issues.
So we know that we have Donald Trump here, and he took net operating loss. It's highly doubtful that he didn't pay any taxes over the last 18 years, given the amount of money he was supposed to have made. But these laws, if we think that Congress is going to get rid of them after this flap, you're nuts. Because there are too many rich people in Congress who have too many rich people and friends contributing to them. And besides, they actually make sense as far as net operating losses. And that is in terms of you lose money, you can carry those losses forward. In other words, you don't pay any tax the first year, but then you can carry what's left of the loss in the following year. And that's pretty much where it is. The most important thing to recognize is a person is only responsible to pay the income tax that is legally due. And if that happens to be zero for the year, you've paid the tax that was due.
It's absolutely amazing. But charitable trust, foundations, John, we use these all the time. We're dealing with about 10 foundations that we have of our wealthiest clients. I mean, this is done all the time, especially as you get into the higher net worth brackets. I mean, why would anybody want to give half their estate, or if Hillary becomes president, 65% of your estate to the government when you pass on, especially if you're a business owner, small business owner, where you have a significant net worth in your business or real estate or something like that? I mean, why would anybody want to do that? And one way to do it, as you get into the higher net worth brackets, I mean, we use living trust after living trust. We use charitable trust. But once you get past a certain level, and usually it's generally around $50 million, we start setting up foundations as a means of not only getting tax deductions to shelter income, but also preserving the assets for the family and carrying on a legacy so the government doesn't confiscate it. It's done all the time, John. It's been, you know, the Rockefellers, John D. Rockefeller was probably the wealthiest man that ever lived, and he willed most of his assets to the Rockefeller Foundation, where they remain today.
And time to introduce our case study, which is a real-life case study. We take these from the lives of people we know, and the names have been changed to protect their privacy. Also, remember, as we do the case study information, it is available on slides on the website that accompany this podcast, so you can visually see what's going on. Who is our case study, and what is their situation?
This week, we have George and Idra Young. George and Idra are both 53, both plan to retire at age 60. George's life expectancy, given his health questionnaire, is age 90. Idra's is age 93. Risk tolerance, moderate. They weren't really conservative, I would say in between. So their investment objectives were moderate growth with preservation of capital. Idra, she is a business owner, and she developed a health food snack that was done very well and is carried by major retail chains. This is her second attempt at a business, as her first business venture did not work out. She is concerned about her kids, given that her and George work long hours. She's hoping to retire early to spend more time with family and friends. George, on the other hand, is a doctor. He's currently owns a practice with two other doctors. He's concerned about doing all that they can to lower taxes, since he and his spouse have great incomes. Now, what is important to George and Idra is creating a legacy, given their net worth, mitigating the impact of taxes, as you can imagine, if you earn high income, maximizing the benefits of being business owners, and early retirement. Now, if you take a look at their budget currently, the way they stand working, essential budget, $260,000, discretionary, mainly travel, $100,000. So expenses were $360,000. The combined Rental income in salary was $830,000, surplus income of about $470,000. So we got down into the nitty-gritty on the budget and say, all right, what do you think you guys are really going to spend if you guys retire? And it got down to essential budget of $110,000. I think that's still a little low, but that's the figure we used in the plan. Discretionary income, $50,000. Total income of $160,000. They had rental income of $30,000. Social Security for both of them would be $60,000 because they both paid maximum Social Security taxes. So the shortfall was $70,000. Now, when we take a look at their balance sheet, there was significant assets here, not all of them which were liquid. They had real estate of about $800,000, rental property of $400,000, and the business was valued at roughly, and this includes George's medical practice, his portion of that medical practice, so it was valued roughly about $3.5 million. George and Idra's taxable investments were roughly about $1.6 million. Their retirement plans, roughly about $1.8 million. And cash, liquid assets in a bank and money market fund was about roughly $553,000. So total investment assets of roughly about $3.9 million. Total assets of $8.6 million. So there's two issues here. One would be estate taxes because the exemption for a single filer is $5,450,000. They had liabilities of debt of $285,000, so their net worth roughly about $8.3 million. Now, the challenges we had looking at this is managing the taxes with multiple businesses, adopting a business structure that would best favor a likely buyout of Idra's business, and develop an estate plan to create a legacy, and of course, planning for their retirement. Now, if we take a look at what we did in the short term, when they start collecting Social Security, they would get $60,000. Rental income would be $30,000. What we did is we took part of their assets and we put that in dividend-paying stocks.
Yeah, but wait a minute, Jim. Dividends are still taxable. Why would you do dividends anyway?
Well, I mean, we did do some municipal bonds. We put about almost $1 million in tax-free bonds at roughly about 2.5%. But they also wanted growth. I mean, they got their net worth by building businesses, saving and investing. And so they still, you know, they were young enough that they realized, hey, you know, if we live to 80 or 90, we're going to need more income when we're 80 than we are when we're 60. So they wanted to keep invested in the market. We also did, you know, a good size tax-free bond portfolio to keep them in a marginal bracket. But we wanted to do that to minimize taxes. And because dividends are in their bracket because of their income would be taxed at 23.8%. And then when they were retired, the tax on dividends, assuming the law remains the same, that tax rate would drop from 23.8 down to 15%. So it would put them in a more favorable situation because their total income would be roughly about $191,000. Of roughly 20 of that would be tax-free, and a good portion of it, about $75,000 of it, or almost $80,000 or more, would be subject to only a 15% tax rate. So they still had surplus income. Now, to minimize taxes, we worked with their CPA to make sure they maximized, because Idra had a $125,000 net operating loss from her business startup. They have from a failed business from the past. And then we wanted to maximize their retirement accounts and other write-offs related to the business, like autos, home office, travel expenses. For when we talked to them, they said they had a potential public company that was looking at her business, and it was a food company. And so I said, you know, the best way to avoid paying taxes would be set up the business in a way that if they were bought out by another company, it would be simply one share of stock traded for another, so to avoid any taxes. We also had to create a trust because they had $8.3 million. And assuming that they live a normal lifespan into their 90s with dividend paying stocks, you know, their stock portfolio is going to be worth a lot more 10, 20, 30 years from now. So we set up a living trust that would allow them to shelter up to $10.9 million. And then also we maximize their retirement plan. But here was a situation from Idra's first business startup, which it was not a success, but there was $125,000 of net operating losses, which we used to structure to offset taxable income.
So here it was, you had Idra and her first business failed with losses. And sometimes businesses dip in and out of losses, but in this case, it was a loss in the first one. But her second business is doing well. She might even be taken over by a larger company. But what you were able to do for her is to use NOLs, net operating losses, from her first business to offset the taxability of the second business. And this is just the way business functions, you know?
We're a capitalistic society. You know, small businesses are really the job creation machine in this country. And whether you have a business that was not successful, in the case of Idra's first business, her second one is. We use those losses to offset some income during the year to reduce taxable income. It's done all the time. And, you know, John, it's just, I'm absolutely amazed sometimes at the ignorance of the press. Maybe it's deliberate or not, but it's done all the time. And so here's a good example of an entrepreneur that, you know, the first time around, it failed. The second time around, a big success.
And don't forget, tomorrow coming up on the program, Alan Cole, Independent Tax Foundation, the facts behind the uproar over the Trump tax return controversy. We'll have some more insight into how the Internal Revenue Service functions in terms of taxes when it comes to gains and losses.
By the way, we're going to be doing a show next week also on taxes as well. Get you prepared because, folks, you've only got, what is it, less than 3 months before the end of the year, and then it's over. So, you know, you want to plan for your taxes. We'll talk about capital gains, various things that you can do, whether it's net operating losses, capital losses, pension plans, and various things that you need to be thinking about right now. You don't want to wait to the holidays in the last minute to try to get something done. So we'll be doing more about tax planning in the weeks ahead. So on behalf of John and I, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.